Three, two, one, check, go.
Good morning and welcome to the Moose Turd Cafe. We appreciate you listening. With your original dusty-footed philosopher and host, Mr. John Case, and his sometimes sidekick and stand-up comic actor, voiceover actor Mike Diesel, our call-in line is 304-885-0708, 304-885-0708. This morning it's Friday, January 26th at 6:22 a.m. in the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia.
That's right. Right. I knew.
This show, by the way, is currently not sponsored.
Well, we're going to change that soon. You know, my buddy that came in, you know, on Tuesday, he's raring to get us some sponsors, and you know, and then there's we have an offer. Ever since I signed up for the Bolivar Community app here, I don't know who's running it. It's called Alignable. Anyway, I'm now being contacted by the pottery people in the Three Rivers place. They used to be owned by that jerk that ran Bolivar for years. But anyway, they want me. They're thinking about they might give us a cheap studio deal there and help pay the rent and stuff like that. In which case, that wouldn't be too bad. That's a beautiful spot, and you know, I said I got to have proffers that really amount to something in order to venture again. So, but anyway,
right.
You know. So anyway, I love those people though. They're very good. They're wonderful artists. That Three Rivers, they came into the show a few times last year and maybe once 2 or 3 years ago as well, because they were just setting this up as Bolivar was dead. Harper's Ferry's
right.
Dead. Right, I mean, no, right. But businesses die here. You know,
there's a lot of towns that in West Virginia that are experiencing that death.
But these guys got three things happened that have sort of made Harper's Ferry come alive, in my opinion. Okay, a little bit. Harper's Ferry Bolivar. One is the vets set up that little guide shack cafe. Okay, where they serve coffee from the Black Dog. People up there who are also a family
Black
of vets.
Dog Brewery, yeah.
Yeah, Black yeah. Dog.
Good coffee.
Roasters, yeah. Good coffee, and also a family of vets, right? That I think there was five children in that family, and I'm not sure. I think all but one of them perished in two wars, okay? I may have the number a little wrong, but they had a lot of tragedy in that family, And now they've done so. And so then a pottery workshop and then an artist studio opened up, and they redid the building. They took some old stuff and made it better. And it's really, you know, like, and of course there's Enlightened Radio at the Red Caboose studio, right?
Right.
By the way, summertime, I got to get to. The other thing is that our new friend has knows something about doing septics and everything. And he's going to hook up the bathroom in the Red Caboose and the shower, and so we can really, at which point it will be completely movable into. Plus, you know, so we got some things going here. Okay, they may sound little to Trump and those dudes. And we didn't sell out to China.
Nothing is little for us. It's, you know, nothing.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, it's just a little progress.
Any kind of small victory we have to keep in perspective is actually quite large.
Yeah. And I had so much fun at the...
In terms of the perspective of what it is that we do.
And I had so much fun watching you guys at the... Abolitionist AL the other night. I got inspired.
The good thing is there'll be more shows coming.
Right. And I got inspired to
John Coulter and Jonathan Fields, and they're doing just a bang up job over there. I can't express how happy that makes me that they've made a decision to commit to my art form.
Stand up.
And I know a lot of people want to push back against that and say it's not an art form. Well, you know what? It is. Okay?
Sure it is. It's performance
there's
art.
There's a particular kind of artistry that's involved when you're putting something like that together.
Absolutely.
And it is not easy.
Oh, absolutely. You can tell from watching you guys do it that it's not. Let me just say, I would like to talk to the people that at Abolitionist and see whether or not we could work out a deal where we could broadcast some of the shows, you know, but
sure.
You know, we'll see how to do that.
I think you'd have to go to...
What's the guy's name?
Coulter.
Rich?
Mr. Coulter, producer of the shows, would have to coordinate something like that.
Yeah, okay.
I wouldn't want to do anything. I don't... See, that's...
No, I'll get a hold of him.
Let me just explain, John, okay? You go out into the world and you become a show producer to a certain extent. You are really leaving yourself open. And what I mean by that is when you produce a show and you put comics on the bill,
yeah.
The one thing you want to do is be able to trust the comics that they will work with you in the future. In many instances across the country, comics have a tendency to sometimes be their own worst enemy.
How so?
And they don't, they go, I'll just go ahead and do it. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
You see my point? Is the comic says, you know, hey, you can rely on me to produce the shows in the future. You don't have to worry about that guy. He's out.
Yeah.
So if somebody likes the comic more than they do the producer, that will create a rift.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of times, you know, comic will end up attempting to sell the product themselves. And,
yeah.
You know, look, I understand that to a certain extent. It's, you know, catch as catch can. It's a tough world out there, blah, blah, blah. But the one thing that I try to do, and I've always tried to do, and maybe this is naivete on my part, is I've attempted to ensure that I don't overstep. I don't tell someone, oh yeah, just because I had a good set, I can set everything up. You know, I'm just this is something I'm prepared for right now.
I got you, man.
But I mean, if John Coulter was to ask me in a pinch, hey, could you pop in there and help set up? And I would say sure.
Right, yeah, right. Well, I want to get a hold of him for a different deal.
I can't make it from Northern Virginia. Can you help me out? Hey, man, no problem.
I want to talk to him about a different deal. I mean, I'm more interested in.
I know. And then that's the thing is I'll make sure that you guys get hooked up.
Yeah,
and that's all I want.
And maybe I don't know what it, I mean. It would be it involve a commitment on my part, I guess, you know, because I would have to, you know, figure out how if I was going to be able to get there for enough shows to make it, you know, worthwhile for them. I mean, just one doesn't matter, right? I mean, who cares about that, right? I mean,
right.
So, I mean, right. It would have to be something that, you know, I'm not going to go out 4 or 5 nights a week if something like that, you know. So it would have to be
no. And I don't think that's what is expected. I think he would just be happy with what would be a sampling.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
here's so and so from
Enlightened Radio.
Sale from blah 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 date.
Yeah, and I, you know, I set it up and
from 2 weeks ago, we have some, you know, and then run it. Sure.
Anyway, and so we could see whether or not basically do some publicity for them on the website and everything like that. All right. Well, that sounds good. Well, today, turns out that Trump did order Mueller to be fired, but his general counsel threatened to resign over it back in June.
Right. Right. Yeah, we found that out.
And,
but it was in June.
Was it?
He did that in June.
That's what I mean. That's in June, yeah. So here we are. So now, you know, he's delighted though to talk to Mueller right now, or so he says. He's delighted.
Yeah, but then immediately you had what's his face, Ty Cobb come out and say, you know, and Dodd come out, both of them come out and say, I'll determine that.
And the
odd thing is no, you're not going to determine that. Mueller will determine that. That's his responsibility to the Constitution. Maybe you guys forgot that there's this little document that you actually have sworn allegiance to, and that's the Constitution of the United States, which means you, all of you assholes, work for us. You don't work for him. He works for us.
Well, in theory, that's what it's supposed to be.
That's what's supposed to be happening here, and that kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
Well,
and I am a bit sick of it.
Well,
I'm getting more and more frustrated, and I don't know what the hell happened over at Faux News, but those folks are a propaganda arm for a dictatorship. They have no credibility.
Look, that's what this is all about. That is what this is all about. A billionaire dictatorship is exactly what this is about.
Yep.
And,
no,
you know...
About it, John. No, if you had a question before, that question should be answered by now.
And it's...
Because we are really entering into a very, very difficult time. And when I say on the air, you know, wake the F up, I goddamn well mean it.
Oh, sure. Everybody. I'm not
playing, man. I mean, this is not something.
This ain't right.
It can be fixed easily.
As your dad might have said, this ain't right.
Well, I mean, he may have said that. He wasn't really a Southern guy, but he loved country music, and he liked to kind of look at things in that perspective and say,
yeah,
that ain't right.
Right.
You know, he was you know, he I have to believe would be absolutely and completely horrified by what is going on right now.
Hey, of George Bush.
I know. My father was, you know, he wanted so much to be involved in a union and it could never happen because of, you know, where he lived, and he felt as if his vote was just kind of,
yeah,
thrown to the wind.
I know,
for a long period of time.
Well, here in the Moose Dirt Cafe, we have no history. Everything is today.
Everything is 5 minutes from now.
Everything is 5 minutes from now, and when the hell can I get out of this cafe? And you know, when will I not need it? You know, to get through the day. When is that day coming? I don't know, man. It's looking dark. It's dark and dark, 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 dark.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're a pessimist, but you're turning me into one as well.
Well,
the problem is I don't want to be. I have to be careful about being grinding my pessimism into my own personal life.
Well, that's true, because otherwise.
But I can't help it when I see what I see.
I know, but you can't take it out on your spouse, for example. You know.
No,
not. You get mad, you get upset.
Where did that come from?
Because I've done that at home here.
Well, I don't.
If I get upset, you know, I get a little bit nasty.
John.
I get a little bit nasty.
That's for me, that's completely off the table.
I'd have to fight it. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't take it out on anybody. My point was I take it out on myself.
Well, okay, but you know,
my point was I don't want to do that. I want to try to make sure that I have some level and degree of enthusiasm for what it is that I'm doing.
Mm.
And a little bit of hope. And it's so, the problem is that it permeates so very much, you know, our entire atmosphere, everything.
Maybe it's time for you to...
There's just a negativity to this that I've never felt before.
Well,
you know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I felt pretty bad during the Nixon years. I mean, I you know, when they were murdering the Black Panther Party people, that I remember that was a bit rough. But, you know, when what's his name? We had defense committees. That was the main thing that happened in the anti-war movement. And the civil rights movement. You had defense committees to try to for people that got arrested.
Right.
You know, you're all the time raising money, you know, somehow to get a lawyer, to get a defense, you know, because they would indict you, everybody, you know, 20, 30 people. Well, that would tie everything up in lawyers, right, pretty soon.
Right.
So, and the charges were, you know, almost always dropped at the end or reduced to a misdemeanor or something. But, you know, it was just... it was very, very repressive atmosphere for a while, and now we see that they want to do that again. I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. I don't quite understand, and it surprised me. Even though in theory I kind of understand it, it surprised me how much the Republicans, you know, pulled in behind him. Even though I know a bunch of them hate him. That surprised me.
That's the strange thing.
It is. I mean, the Bushes stand out, but...
Well, I mean, all the... Especially the House. I mean, they're crazy.
Well, that's true.
I mean, honestly, I believe that there's a psychosis in the Freedom Caucus that you're not going to get rid of.
No.
That's a cult within a cult within a cult.
No, those people need to a trip to the woodshed.
You guys got to see this, man. Come on out here.
The hairbrush. Mom, I got to take the hairbrush to you, pal.
Yeah, well, it's... I don't know. There's such a odd stream of consciousness flowing... or non-stream of consciousness flowing through those folks that the man, I don't know what playbook they're operating from, but it ain't pretty.
Every time I see Mueller carrying his briefcase,
puritanical, fascist,
yes.
And I would right here, right now, ask, and it's a futile ask, that Lou Dobbs be removed from any television station.
Yeah, he's terrible.
And any radio station.
Yeah.
They are poison.
They are.
They are divisive. They are awful human beings.
Yeah, well, Hannity should have been arrested a long time ago.
Oh, without doubt. Without a doubt. With the supposed right-wing racist assholes over in, where was it, Oregon or wherever they were, Utah?
Utah,
trying to take over government land.
Yeah, right. That's where he's at. Right.
And they had their guns pulled on. You know, I'm all for the law and order. You know, except when it messes with my narrative on my stupid show.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's no bottom to it.
Speeches over and over again. You see these guys kowtowing, kissing ass to law and order, and who's the first people to get thrown under the bus when the law and order's coming for them? God damn it! Pathetic, pathetic human beings. God almighty.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, just, wow.
Where's the posse? Oh, we got the posse comitatus.
They're coming first, man. We gotta say something. Or fight back. Is he gonna fight back? You can't fight back if you've already broke the goddamn law a million times, you moron! Christ! Not that I feel one way or another about it. And I apologize, I have not mentioned Marcus in a long time.
I know, but I got a headline for you.
Well, he went on hiatus. He got cold.
Okay, but I got a headline for you. This is the New York Times headline. Excellent. We can't win in Afghanistan because we don't know why we're there.
Yeah.
Boy, that hits the nail on the head, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Why are we in Afghanistan? I don't know.
No one knows. We're just there.
We're there because we were there and we've lost lives there. And there's no end to it, okay? And we don't know, the government we're defending is indefensible. and the opponents that we're fighting, we don't know what we're supposed to do with them. You know, what are we supposed to do? Govern the country?
We're fighting them in there, but we're arming them somewhere else.
Well, that's going on too. And that Pakistani intelligence spy service has reportedly taken advantage of this, you know, big time. You know, the fact that, for example, the U.S. is targeting, you know, ethnic factions in Afghanistan that have all these relations in Pakistan, right? But no one can explain why they're attacking. What are you doing? You know, and you're not. You say the drug trade. Well, no, because the guys running the Afghan government are running the drug trade too. So, I mean, what the hell are you talking about?
Right.
And you get riddled with contradictions. So U.S. policy ends up making no sense, and yet they're bombing people. And so, you know, well, yeah.
Well, not only that, you still have the drone program.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's the main way. That's turning out to be the main way we're doing it. I mean, really, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, somebody in
on the ground.
Yeah, somebody in over here at Fort Detrick behind a computer screen is at war with somebody in Afghanistan.
Right. Yeah.
And he said they're playing on the computer.
Certainly, it's not going to, at the end of the day, as much as it just seems like it continuously goes back to their chaos theory.
If you keep it chaotic.
If we create chaos, everyone will be really busy.
That's right, and they won't be able to put it together to get rid of us.
Right. And we just keep piling on the chaos, and we...
Right.
And one of the points that was made, one of the commentators made a really good point that nobody's really looking at, is a lot of these Republicans that are, you know, higher levels of leadership are cashing out based on the tax thing. They're cashing out. They're like, okay, nothing's going to, it doesn't matter. I'm going to make mine and see you later. You know, everybody says they're retiring. These guys, some of these guys are incredibly rich, and they weren't when they started. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, now which ones are you talking about now?
Somebody like Daryl Issa, who was a criminal from the jump.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, from the carjacking.
I got you, man.
I mean, that guy, he's liquid wealth.
Yeah.
And it just seems like that's the Kabul, man.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they don't want anybody else in the door.
We've got to talk about something else this morning, and that is this University of Michigan thing.
Yeah, did I send you the article that Charlie Pierce wrote?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, no, you told me. You didn't. I looked it up and read it. Yeah.
Good. Because I thought you would think that was very well written.
It was.
I thought it was.
Well done. And but let me just say that this is the number of people. I think it's up to 150 or something that gave testimony that are recorded by the New York Times.
Yep.
And for obviously, lots of people knew about this. Okay, now how high up? We'll find out at some point, I suppose. But there should be an investigation. But you know, this is an example, right, of how, you know, I think there was some criticism of some of the celebrities who combined to take on, you know, both Weinstein and then say, oh, there's lots of other things going on in employment too. And son of a bitch, here you look at the Olympic Committee and whoa.
Well, now, yeah, I know. And it's amazing that this should actually, like Charlie Pierce said, should bring down the Olympic Committee completely.
I think three of them have resigned.
Well, I think the rest of them need to go.
They should all go.
I think you put the survivors in those positions.
Absolutely, man. That would be the right thing to do.
In there to run things, you're not going to have to worry about any kind of crazy business going on.
There was some Republican congressman yesterday, though, that said, these things with the women, I think they have snakes in their head.
What?
Yeah. I can't remember. I have to look up that article. I saw that last night in the middle of the night. You know, I woke up at 2:30. God, you know.
Right in line with the idiot that Republican from Pennsylvania, I think, representative, said he wants dinner on the table when he gets home.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
It's kind of like, okay, well, then you know where the fridge is, right? Where the stove is, right? Get your ass to work, pal.
Oh, that's true, buddy. That is true.
You know, that's true. Get going. You want dinner on the table? You might want to think about taking some cooking lessons, asshat.
So if we think about this recent last couple of weeks, okay. Now, I it's interesting. I see that Schumer is getting a little bit better press now than he was right after the event, but clearly the immigration issue is going to play really big. It seems it's going to be one of the main cards that Trump is going to keep using and hammering, you know, all the way to the election. I'm sure he's got to get every wedge issue he can get, right, to overcome the fact that he's sitting there 10 points below in popularity, or at least should be 20. He should be 30, but he's not yet. That's the problem. But anyway, so I think, the big question is that if you respond to the immigration issue that he keeps raising and that, you know, all this other stuff, what's the right tactic for the Democrats to do? Knowing in advance he wants to make the divisive issue the number one issue always, right? But how do you respond to that? Because it's easy to get sucked into it. I mean, I get sucked into it. Everybody gets sucked into it. Of taking on the outrageous comment, you know, and then, you know, are you really paying attention to where is it going to get rid of this guy? Okay. Are you really counting? Where's the count, right? What does it take to turn it around? Now, and so I've been reading, and I suppose you have too. Maybe you're not on Manchin's list anymore, but I am. And, you know, he's making this, that's his entire case, okay, frankly. If you ain't got the middle, you can't beat this guy, okay? Now, what does that really mean, though, in terms of issues? I mean, you have to throw all the immigrants under the bus? I mean, what are we talking about?
I mean, it's to me, though, I don't know that politicians are exceedingly accurate when it comes to estimating what they're up against. Because let me just explain it to you like this. I had given this some thought, and I wanted to credit my wife for giving me this analogy. We had flu shots this year, okay?
Yeah.
But those flu shots are against the flu that was here last year.
That's always the case, actually.
So, right. So you're constantly catching up with numbers.
Right.
So it's a much more volatile electorate right now than I think it's ever been.
Okay, that's a good point. That's true, yeah.
You know, I think it's so volatile that you can't really... And not only that, if you throw in some people fudging some numbers here and there at, you know, I don't know, a state election board, and, you know, being compromised or whatever it is, whether that be an outside influence, an inside influence, whatever it is to steer the voting, and then you enter into you have voter ID restrictions, then there's all kinds of changes.
Yeah.
You know, you essentially have gutted a lot of the rules and regulations with regards to the Voting Rights Act. So you can feel free to set up barriers everywhere. And then whether you think those barriers affect that or not, you know, I got some property at the tip of Florida, I'll tell you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly, buddy.
But you understand my point.
I do. I do.
There's no... All of those factors you don't see. Everybody wants data about this so fast.
That's right. Yeah.
They want it. You know, they want it yesterday. Give me the data. Well, I can't. I can't give you the data. It doesn't exist right now.
So you have to go with yeah, sure. Well, you're trying to find a trend, right?
What? Hey, John, with that said, it's coming up on time for me to go bye-bye.
Okay. Well, listen, good luck today with all the procedures and everything like
Thank
that.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. And,
okay.
And everybody out there, take care of yourself. I know it's the weekend. Try to find something to positively occupy your time and enjoy your time with your family and friends.
Thanks, pal. All right. Take care,
okay.
Pam.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye-bye. Well, that was Mike Diesel. And you're listening to the Moose Turd Cafe here on enlightenradio.org. And we're going to put both shows up here, yesterday's and today's, up on the web here in a minute. As soon as we get done here, I don't know, but I'm going to do a little bit of more news review for you guys that are listening. And my main point, I think, is going to be that people need to be thinking about, I think, I'm thinking about it more and more. And, of course, you know, we're all subjective, and so whatever we're thinking about, well, maybe other people should be, I wonder what they're thinking, too. Anyway, the question of democracy. What is it, really? How did it arise? How has it changed? Because it's not just one thing, right? I mean, the democracy of 1776, you know, there was nowhere near the franchise and voting, for example, that there is now. And, I mean, if you didn't have property, if you were a woman, if you were black, or if you were indentured, you couldn't vote, okay? You really had no political standing. Part of this was part of the legacy of all of our ancient histories where, you know, the overwhelming majority of the people were illiterate and not stupid, but did not have the tools with which to challenge those that were. And this has been true through history. Not that there have not been upheavals and rebellions, you know, of poor people repeatedly. But nonetheless, in order to, you know, run a society, you got to be able to gather all of its talents and work and, you know, keep the, make sure that there's food today. Food, shelter, and clothing today and tomorrow. And a lot of times the tomorrow is a tough thing to do. But anyway, democracy arose, you know, when capitalism arose, basically, at least the modern form of democracies, forms of democracy that we are living with, at least in good parts of the country. But there are other paths that have opened up that... I mean, I'll give China, you know, Russia. What would be another good example? Well, China, Russia, the European Union, United States. Let's take those four entities, you know, that are the major players on the world stage. And in China and in Russia, okay, they were... later than Europe and the United States on industrialization, okay? China, not that much, excuse me, Russia, not that much later because, but the industrial sections of Russia were very confined in a couple of cities, in a couple of areas, and the feudal system of the Tsar and going back 1,000 years, right, was heavily entrenched because Russia was an overwhelmingly rural country and backward in many, many respects. Okay, so most of the population, again, would be in a situation very similar to what the colonial inhabitants of the United States, actually, okay, in some respects, except that where the colonial power was even stronger. It wasn't even a colony. It had been there forever. So you have a situation like in those backward countries where the world powers of the West, and they arose and became industrialized and unbelievably wealthy by comparison to their past. Unbelievably wealthy. So fast. And faster than the countries that were more rural and had a longer feudal traditions. And it happened through a series of revolutions in Europe, of course, and in the United States, where the governments of the old feudal regimes were overthrown and made way for the emergence of a capitalist and a market, industrial economies, which proceeded apace from then till now. But in Russia and China, not so much. There, you know, in order to catch up, they had to overthrow the ancient regime, okay? But the business sector of the country was too weak to do that. You know, the merchant class, okay? The emerging capitalist class, if you want to call them that, although it was a little more primitive than modern capital, but nonetheless, the emerging merchant class, which became, you know, the basis of our market system, capitalism, and our market economy, and a capitalist economy where we produce for exchange. That's the essence of a commodity economy: is you're producing not for yourself, but to sell to someone else in exchange for money, which you're going to use then to buy somebody else's product. And that's how you're going to live. Or you're going to be the person that has enough savings, you know, to invest in the production, and you sell the product, you hire the labor, and then you, you know, get capital in return if you're successful. That economy did not set root in all these countries: China, Russia, United States, Europe. But it was unable to seize power over the ancient regime very quickly in Russia and China. And what happened there was because the pressures of war, especially the First World War, the dislocation of empires and the rapid changes taking place, basically caused Russia to become involved in that war. And as a result of that, but they were just pawns for the European powers at that point. The Tsar, that's how weak the Tsar was, but they got sucked into it, and nobody was there to stop them from the disaster, except it turns out to be the Bolsheviks in that case. And in China, same thing, only a generation later, after World War II, the emerging business class trying to, you know, deal with China's own ancient history, couldn't do it. They weren't strong enough to do it. And it became so compromised, you know, in the war times that, again, there was nobody but the communists, basically, to get rid of the old regime. And they did so. And so from the beginning, you've now had, but the thing about the communist regimes, both in Russia and China, is that they were one-party regimes, and they operated under a theory that in order to make the transformation from the old regime to a modern one, that they both started out with the idea that it would be possible to skip democracy, skip the capitalist thing, because, you know, what they'd seen in capitalism was they weren't that impressed with it. So they tried to go the way of we'll just set up an ideal state, and we will get rid of all the people that are making money off of other people, and we'll see whether we can set up an ideal regime. Well, that didn't work. It didn't work in China. It didn't work in Russia. It worked. It did some things, but it was not sustainable, and that's why the Soviet system collapsed, and it's why the Mao regime collapsed. Now, consequences of that were very different. China committed itself to a kind of market socialism, which is they were going to keep the direction going, but they were going to, you know, rely upon the market system and capitalist production, basically, to production for profit, for exchange, to make economic development possible, to develop their people, their workforce. Because that's the huge task that you have to do. How do your people get developed? And so they, so they do not operate a formal democracy. It's a one-party system. They have votes, but of course there's usually a lot of times a slate of votes, and there's a lot of contradictions in that system. Nonetheless, it's not necessarily been shown yet that it's impossible to make it work and be responsive to the needs of the people. So China's system, for example, is an example of where it's not yet clear whether they were right or wrong to not pursue a more liberal path. They've maintained an attempt to, I think, trying to be scientific about how to direct society. Now, of course, science is easily transformed into ideology if you're not careful. Okay, but nonetheless, it's not over yet. So and at the same time, in the United States and in Western Europe, there have been challenges with the how democratic can a capitalist society be when one of the trends in capitalism is this aggravated income inequality, which is a tendency that is constantly keeping the political system in turmoil, and returns again and again and again, no matter what you do to it. Nonetheless, the choice of democracy, because one of the things about capitalism is nobody particularly likes one capital to be running everything. They don't particularly like that. And that doesn't develop the system. One guy takes over and just hands out monopolies to his buddies. Okay, that kind of thing, right? No one wants. That's what happened with the king in England. He kept handing out monopolies in the business sector to his friends. And why should there be a monopoly in sugar? Why should there be a monopoly in cotton? So you get rid of that, and the idea is you have everybody compete, and you have a system where you balance interests. But of course, in the United States, government was one of the first experiments on how to do that, and we have to say that it has worked reasonably well despite being nearly overthrown in several instances. And again, it's now the big question now is whether it's going to be overthrown again. We went through, a revolution. And it was a serious revolution. We confiscated the property of the lords, okay, and the feudal properties of the king of England. Lord Baltimore, Lord this, Lord that, Lord Charles. they were all confiscated, and I don't think we compensated them for it. We won a war, and that's the spoils of victory. And we declared those who collaborated with them as traitors. And then we did it again in the Civil War, where we decided we were not going to be able to live with slaveholders or slaves. And we confiscated all their property. And the political system shifted. The franchise was expanded heavily under Andrew Jackson, by the way, if you were white, okay, but still, before then, poor whites didn't get much of a vote. Jackson did change that. And so then we had the 60s come along, and the 30s, and where we had women get the right to vote, and we had African-Americans get more of a right to vote in the Civil Rights Movement, and then all of a sudden we decided to take a reverse trip with Mr. Ronald Reagan. And we've been on that reverse trip now. First economically, and because the economics are not working, because the division in wealth has just gotten worse and worse and worse, less and less just. now we have political turmoil built upon that as well, or and some of it's not reversible. You can't just turn around and go back. You have to go forward somehow, and forward is toward conflict, because there's no the democracy we now have is not yet, not does not appear to be working to resolve this basic shared prosperity concept. It was the foundation of the Roosevelt era, the New Deal, of social democracy in Europe. It was the big compromise between the inequality tendencies of capitalism and is our growth raising all boats or just those of a few? All right, that's the basic balance you're seeking, and now we've challenged. So the question is that it's not clear entirely how the defense of democracy should be addressed now. What do we mean by it? What is it that sustains it? I think we all could agree, I mean, most of us could agree, that as long as the system remains in balance and in basic equilibrium, as long as civil society can debate issues without shooting each other, and respect, you know, majority and minority rights, a balance between majority and minority rights in the society. As long as you can have that, well, then the assumption is, and I think it's a good one, is that you're going to get, you know, the most out of your people. If everybody has a stake, everybody has rights, then everybody, you know, the contribution of everybody tends to be additive. Okay, if you have a few taking everything, I mean, frankly, the ones on the bottom, they stop working so hard. And they start to jam up the system because it's not doing anything for them. And that's where we're at now. So as a question, how do we get back to a framework in which democracy can flower and work? And is that really our goal? Because that is the path to solving our problems down the road in the future, finding the right solutions through a much bigger aggregate input. And I'll go back to my old and I don't have a proof of one way or the other, but I'll go back to my old union, UE, and in the statement of Jim Mattis, one of the founders of the union, about why rank and file unionism was the right way to go, and he objecting, of course, answering the critics that said, "Well, you know, a lot of times the workers don't know enough to know what's good for them." And Jim would say that, you know, that's true. A lot of times they don't. But how the hell do they learn? Okay, how do people become empowered? Well, you take it on, you walk it through, and you find out if it works yourselves. Okay, don't take anybody's word for it. And that empowerment is the most important historical and lifetime achievement that you seek. And I'm paraphrasing, of course, Jim, I would have to do it in a Romanian accent to make it work. And I leave it with that there, that yes, I found a lot of times that the members would vote in the thing that I thought was wrong. But, you know, they voted for it, and they had to live under what they voted for, whether it was to fight or to accept or to compromise or to do whatever, okay? They had to live under it, and it was their act. And, you know, nothing teaches like experience, and so that was the foundation of a powerful movement, the labor movement in the United States, because people became educated about what they could do and how they could affect change. And so we're going to leave you with that today as the biggest argument fundamentally in favor of democracy. But we've had times in this country and in every country where, in order to expand democracy, empowerment of any kind, you sometimes have to go through a period where you have to smash certain relations in order to reestablish an equilibrium. And that little period, which we call revolutions, is not particularly democratic. It's lawless. It's part lawless. You know, maybe half and beyond. And in that lawless time, it's organization that counts. Democratic